We credit a lot of what we see on a movie screen to a film's director, perhaps too much. One of the cinema artists who helped set the tone and visual language for a film is the art director, and an upcoming exhibition of rare drawings, sketches, storyboards, and paintings from some of Hollywood's greatest art directors and illustrators will focus on the golden age of movies and is part of the larger programming of the upcoming Plaza Classic Film Festival. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. The art exhibition Moving Pictures, Production Art from the Academy Library, will open tomorrow at the El Paso Museum of Art, and I'm pleased to have on the program today Ann Coco, Graphic Arts Librarian at the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, and someone who was instrumental in putting this exhibition together. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's not the same without you this year. We've worked together for the last 2 years. On two other exhibitions, the Ten Commandments exhibit that was 2 years ago, as well as the Edith Head exhibit last year at the El Paso Museum of Art. I want to say thanks right off the top for all your work over those years to bring these great exhibitions to El Paso.
Well, thanks for inviting us. It's always a pleasure to be able to expand the scope of people's idea about what the Academy is beyond that one night that I think everybody's aware of. There are about 364 other days of the year that we're busy doing other things as well.
Yeah.
And for me, it's taking care of our graphic arts collection. So that's our 46,000 movie posters, and we're saying roughly right now about 25,000 pieces of production art. So costume or production design drawings, storyboards, animation art, backgrounds, caricatures, just any kind of two-dimensional work on paper that's used to convey an idea during the production of a film.
And we should note that the Academy has multiple buildings in Los Angeles, and you work out of the Margaret Herrick Library, which houses all of these works you just mentioned.
I do. And we are right now in a fundraising campaign for a museum. I'm thinking that by the year 2017 rolls around, we'll be talking about four buildings rather than three.
Well, we look forward to the coming years when we can go to an actual museum that's open to the public there. I know the Margaret Herrick Library, people can visit. You have a beautiful reading room there, but I guess to actually see anything in the collection, you really do need an appointment. Just FYI, if anyone's listening and wants to pop in and see you.
Yeah, we do have a pretty amazing collection, in my opinion. It is a fairly great collection, but yeah, we do require an appointment to see some of these things. So, you guys in El Paso, you're getting a really wonderful opportunity to see 30 pieces from the collection, and Charles has selected, we kind of thought about this, quite frankly, he selected some of our most fabulous pieces, I think, for you guys. So take advantage and go see it.
Well, thanks for that. I wouldn't say we fought. We negotiated. But of the pieces that are there, I was thinking back, you know, the Academy has been around since the late silent period, the late 20s. And at what point did it turn some of its attention to collecting and conserving and preserving some of this history?
Well, we know that the library has always been around. We think that in the early years of the Academy's foundation, it was simply a reading room, a place where members would go and they'd hang out, maybe read a periodical. In the late 1930s, a woman came on board who was a trained librarian, and she really, we see really quickly evidence of her involvement, and she started sending out bibliographies to universities across the United States saying, these are our holdings. Take a look, tell us what you have. If there's something that you have that we don't, I'd like to know. And that's how she began building the collection. So it started in the mid-1930s. Our first manuscript special collection came to her as well, I believe in the late 1940s. So we've been at this for quite a while. And the last, I would say, probably since the mid-1980s, it feels like, particularly with the manuscript part of our collection, and by that I mean the career papers of a working director or a producer or a costume designer or art director, filmmakers like Alfred Hitchcock or George Stevens, Edith Head, we talked about a little earlier, the art director Gene Allen, their correspondence, their notes, their memos, annotated scripts, that kind of material. It feels like that really took off, I would say, starting in the mid-1980s. And that is, quite frankly, that I think is what we are best known for today, are our special collections.
And as a place for historians to go who are writing books or treatises on these directors, let's talk about the exhibit. It's, as you mentioned, it collects together 30, not just images, but paintings and sketches and storyboards and all manner of artwork from the movies. The films represented include Gone with the Wind, Giant, War of the Worlds, Gunga Din, The Big Sleep, Sergeant York, Sleeping Beauty, Mary Poppins. It goes on and on. The focus this year, though, is on art directors. That's what links all of these pieces. And it, I know certainly over the last year, going through your collection with you and looking at some of these pieces at the library there, that, you know, it struck me how many of these drawings and paintings have a direct correlation to what we actually see in the finished film. I don't know if this is the right way to think of it, but that the art directors at the time who were working within the studio system perhaps had even more control over the final appearance of a film, at least beyond what a director's decisions were in the studio system, than maybe even today, where directors, at least in very visual films today, I think directors have a lot of say of what comes out of that, because they are often hiring the art director as opposed to working with an art director at a studio, which really doesn't happen anymore.
Something like the drawing for Foreign Correspondent. I mean, there is a scene in that film that it feels as though that the cinematographer, that the entire production team was working directly from that drawing. It just, like, what we see in that drawing is what we see on the screen.
It's like Alfred Hitchcock just animated that drawing.
That's exactly how it feels to me. I think we could say the same thing about the Riata House for Giant.
Yes. People have a passing knowledge of some of the big names of directors and maybe producers in Hollywood in the Golden Age. We've mentioned Alfred Hitchcock and others in our conversation today. But the art directors and the names of the illustrators that are part of this exhibit, when people read their names, will probably be not known to most visitors to the exhibit. Yet, I think they represent some of the iconic art directors and production designers of the Hollywood studio system.
And one thing I would point out is that when you're looking at a production design drawing, you should not make the assumption that the art director is the person responsible for what you're seeing in that drawing. The studios in their heyday were huge factories, and an art director or costume designer even might be overseeing the physical production of close to 100 films in a year. Let's say 50.
Isn't that amazing?
Let's say 50 to be conservative. That's a huge volume of output. So there's no way that they could strategically think about these productions and do the illustration and all of the other things that they would need to do for a given production. So they turned over a lot of that work to illustrators. For example, if we go back to Foreign Correspondent, the credited production designer or art director on that film was Alexander Golitsyn. And we believe that the illustrator on that piece is Robert Boyle. So Golitsyn's not the illustrator. One exception, and this is a fairly unusual one, is the drawing for Giant. The art director on that film was Boris Levin, and very unusually, he was also the illustrator, or is the illustrator, of that piece that you guys will be able to see. And it's a lovely drawing. That's probably truly one of my favorite pieces in the collection.
It occurs to me that all of these were just part of a process of making the movie. The movie was the end result. It was what everybody was focused on. Yet most of the pieces in this exhibit, on their own, even if you don't know the film, are extraordinary pieces of art just in their own right. And we haven't always thought of this process material as being worthy of artistic evaluation on its own merits.
Right. Well, it was never meant to be.
Right.
You just think of it as, you know, this was guys doing business, essentially. Mm-hmm. How is that house going to look out on the plains of Texas?
Yeah, give me a sketch.
How is it going to look? Yeah. So what has occurred in subsequent years is that there has become, let's call it a fetishization of specific films, specific directors, particularly actresses. And so, like, I have so many examples in the collection that are just absolutely beautiful drawings in and of themselves, but they're for films that nobody cares about. You know, I could fill a room with drawings, both costume and production design drawings, for a movie called Gaily Gaily that nobody really cares about, seems to care about. But the drawings that I have are absolutely beautiful. You know, collectors, thank goodness for collectors, and thank goodness for you know, some smart folks that were working at the studios that managed to get some things out. A lot of this material ended up in private hands. The studios really didn't make much of an effort to take care of these conceptual pieces, and so they ended up in private hands. They were traded. There's become this incredible market where you see things at auction with a great degree of regularity. And yeah, so now today we see them framed and in museums, which I just think that, you know, it's like I wonder if these early filmmakers, Mitchell Leeson, yeah, if he would just like laugh to no end that his stuff is hanging in a museum. And it's not stuff, I shouldn't say stuff, yeah. that his artwork is hanging in a museum. That's a pretty profound change from a piece of business.
Do you have a favorite piece in this exhibit?
The drawing for The King and I, yes. I think, is pretty spectacular. It's just, A, it's lovely, but B, you probably know. What's the ratio on that film?
It's a widescreen film, but the drawing is even wider, I think.
Right. So, and that's, I think, what I really like about it, is that it really brings home that idea of widescreen, just straight from the drawing. I think I mentioned earlier the piece from Foreign Correspondent, which I really, really like quite a bit. The piece from Giant. The piece from Sleeping Beauty is really quite sweet.
And that's the smallest piece. And it's,
it is.
That was Disney's first widescreen film, but it's this tiny little, maybe 4x8 piece of wood that's painted. I really like, you know, there's a couple of pieces that are certainly much quicker produced than a lot of the images, and particularly the North by Northwest, the architectural sketches that we have in the exhibit of James Mason's house up behind Mount Rushmore as an architect. I find those fascinating, and they are very quick, and it's sketched on sketching paper with pencil, but...
Yeah, so that is not a real house. That's a common misconception. It is not a real house. It was not designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. I think that's another rumor that we hear from time to time. And that is a sketch by Robert Boyle.
It is a beautiful piece, and I think it fills in, you know, there's some very lovely paintings in the exhibit, but there are a few pieces that kind of show the process a little more than others, and that's certainly one of them. Mm-hmm. And I think it helps round out the educational side of the exhibit.
Yeah. The one thing that I would point out is that the storyboards that are included in here, I don't want people to make the assumption that storyboards are necessarily documentation for the production, for the art department. They are typically done for the benefit of the director. So they may be sketched by someone in the art department, but they're usually for the benefit of the director, to show a sequence of shot, to show a camera movement. And you've got some nice ones in this piece.
Well, again, even though they were just produced as functional outlines for the director, the artists of those pieces clearly couldn't help themselves from fully elaborating what they thought those scenes should look like.
Yeah.
Well, it's all great, and it's amazing the scope that we've put together with 30 pieces, and I truly want to thank you for all your work and assistance on this marvelous exhibition. Thank you so much, Anne, for speaking with me today.
It was a delight.
I've been discussing the art exhibition Moving Pictures, Production Art from the Academy Library, with the Academy's graphic arts librarian, Anne Coco. The exhibition is part of the Plaza Classic Film Festival and opens at the El Paso Museum of Art tomorrow, Sunday, July 28th, and will run through September 8th. The exhibition is free to the public, and more information about the exhibit can be found on the festival's website at plazaclassic.com. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.